Greetings, Vault Dwellers, and welcome to another edition of Conversations in the Dark here in the Vaultcast as part of the Vault of Horror. And I'm very excited this time out. I know I always say that, but I'm usually lying. This time, I'm actually very excited. And the reason is because I have with me tonight a horror blogger, which if you read horror blogs at all and you don't know who this person is, you're doing it wrong, obviously. This is somebody who inspired me to start the Vault of Horror. So I'm very psyched. And of course, it's Stacy Ponder of the great, excellent, long-running blog known as Final Girl. So welcome to the Vault of Horror, Stacy.
Thank you, Ryan. It is an honor, indeed. I didn't know that I inspired you to start the Vault of Horror. I didn't know that. Really? Is that true? Or do you say that to everybody?
I only say it to people who started a blog before I did.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. That's a good answer.
No, you know, it's true, though. You, among several others, but you were and are, in my opinion anyway, the most high-profile horror blogger there is. So, I mean, especially at the time I was starting it, that was, you know, it was one of the ones I gravitated towards. So, definitely.
Oh, that's cool. I don't know how it happened, you know. I really don't. It's just because I've been around for a long time, I think. It's like winning, you know, the Oscar when you're like 95. It's like that kind of thing. Just like, yeah, you're a venerable horror blogger because you've been around for a few years, you know. I'll take it. It's cool.
It's like a lifetime achievement award. You know, it's like when they gave the Oscar to John Wayne for True Grit, you know?
Right, exactly.
But no, it's more than just being a. See, I'm not. This is going to turn into the Stacy Ponder themed episode of Conversations in the Dark. But it's more than just being, you know, having longevity. It's also the fact that, I mean, you know, everybody reads your site. I mean, you know, it's the amount of people that you draw to listen to what you have to say. I mean, that's an important thing to me. Some people don't care if anybody's reading it or not. I'm one of those people that. It matters a lot to me. I want people to read what I have to say, so that's important to me.
Gotcha. Okay. But I think the key is writing like you don't care.
Yes, that's true.
You know, you have to just kind of do it, and I think if it's genuine and it's coming from a place of love and passion and all of that kind of thing, I think people will continue to read it. You know, I think it's easy to weed out the people who you can tell are just doing it for attention, and I'm not saying that that's the case with you at all. But people start a horror blog solely to kind of get some weird internet attention or something.
It's been known to happen. Yes, I will say that.
And then they usually wrap it up because it's, you know, it's a lot of hard work.
Right, that's right. Either that or they're just not writers, really. And, you know, it's one of those things where when you have to write all the time and you're not a writer or you don't even like to write, it's sort of it's not going to end well, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's a painful process. But I love the blogs where you go on and it's like, you know, the first post is, welcome to my blog. It's going to be the best blog about whatever of all time. I'm so excited, you guys. And then, like, 60 days later, there's another post. Like, sorry, I haven't updated you guys. I've been really busy.
What?
And then that was 3 years ago. You know? And then they just drop it.
See, the thing is, when I started it, I was thinking that way because I'm thinking, all right, nobody cares, nobody knows who I am, nobody cares who I am. So I'm not going to make this thing about me and about the fact, I'm not going to write a post about writing a post. So when I started it, my first post was the most mundane. It was just some random news item that I picked up somewhere because I just figured, like, well, who cares that this new blog is starting? Nobody's going to care unless I make them care. So I didn't do that specifically, but yeah, people definitely do that.
Yeah.
But you were going to say something?
Oh, probably nothing of consequence. I don't even remember.
All right. Well, then I guess it's for the best that we move along.
Exactly. Let's get off the topic of me.
It's sort of still tangentially you in a way. I like to use that word because I think what we wanted to get into a little bit was something that you did over the month of October, which was the very cleverly titled Shocktober.
I don't know where I came up with that.
It really, it, It was ingenious, I thought. You know, I never would have.
Yeah. You know. Absolutely. And I am the only one who uses it, which is kind of really cool. So.
But I think, I mean, I participated in that, if I'm not mistaken. I sent you a list, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
You did.
Because what it was, I mean, well, I mean, I know, but explain what it was, you know?
Okay. In early September, I think it was, I put out a call to everybody who happened to cross my blog to send me a list of their favorite 20 horror movies. You know, not the ones that are considered classics, not the ones that are considered good or what they thought were the best horror films, but the ones that are their favorites. And when I did it, I had no idea that it would get such a huge response. And so my intentions for the month were to, like, I figured I'd get, like, 40 or 50 films, and then I could write about them, you know, a couple of films each day and write this big thing and blah, blah, blah. And it was a huge response. And so basically I just spent the entire month of October counting down the 732 movies that made the list. Revealing everybody's favorite horror movies.
That's a lot of, I mean, 732 movies out. So how many people responded?
I can't even say. Like, I'm actually, earlier today, I thought about maybe trying to figure out a rough number of people who submitted a list, trying to figure it out. The only thing I know right now is that the number one film, which was John Carpenter's Halloween, got 123 votes. So I know that at least 123 people responded.
It's amazing.
I think the number's much higher than that.
It's funny, though.
We'll have to do the math later, you know?
Yeah, really. It's important. I mean, you know, statistics, it's just people are fascinated by that. So you should get on that.
I should get on that. People love lists.
Yeah, they do.
The internet has just become a list factory.
Well, you know, I was looking at, I wanted to talk about Halloween for a second, but I was looking at the kind of wrap-up post that you did on it, and it was sort of like, you know, what I learned from Shocktober. And it's all these kind of, you know, statistics, basically, of the type of how it all broke down. Like, it's kind of, it doesn't surprise me, you know, for example, like, the most popular decade is the 80s. It always seems to kind of break down that way. And I mean, it's sort of an age thing, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I was rooting for the 70s, I have to say.
I was too.
I'm always rooting for the 70s.
In life in general.
In life in general. I'm like, let's bring them back, you know, because they were just the best. But the 70s came in third, which kind of surprised me.
So what was the second
half? This modern feminism came in second. The aughties, the naughty aughties came in second.
Yeah,
so,
I hate that. I don't know what to call the last decade. It bothers me. But that's sad.
Yeah.
The 70s, I always feel like the 70s is basically the best decade for movies, period, horror or otherwise.
Yeah, especially American cinema was just, you know, going gangbusters. And music, like, I've got a huge soft spot for 70s music.
Yes.
It's everything from classic rock to disco to singers and songwriters to all of it. Like, I just love it. I could go on about the 70s all day.
Oh my God, my parents' record collection is like a treasure trove. I've slowly but surely been pilfering all of it to play on my turntable. Well, it's funny because I mean, now we're talking about 70s music, but I've always felt like since the 70s, basically American popular music has been steadily declining since the 70s. Every decade is worse than the one before it.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I'm not sure. I think there's good stuff out there now on the indie scene, but popular music? I mean, I guess it was kind of the same back in the day. Like, is there that much of a difference between, you know, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and, like, the Backstreet Boys?
No. But, like, you know, I mean, God, I mean, in, you know, 1973 alone, for some reason I fixate on that year, you had, you know, Stevie Wonder and Revisions. You had, what the heck, you had Piano Man, you had Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, you had There Goes Rhyme and Simon, and what the hell, Houses of the Holy. I mean, it's an insane, I think the Rolling Stones had, like, Let It Bleed or one of those. I mean, you don't get years like that. It just doesn't happen anymore, you know?
No. I think that society in general is sort of, I don't even know if this is a real word, but it's becoming infantilized. I'm going to pretend that's a word. We're becoming more and more childish. Like, adulthood is put off for longer and longer. You know, like, I do think that 40 is the new late 20s at this point. You know what I mean? Like, people are putting off marriage and kids, and nobody's really an adult until they're, like, 45.
No, it's true.
Popular culture is reflecting that.
That's one of my favorite things to rant about like a maniac. So, you know, it's good that you brought that up because it is true. It is infantilization is definitely taking place, and it's happening in music and everywhere else. I mean, when you look at like the pop idols are literally getting younger and younger to the point that I think they're going to become, there's going to be like toddlers, you know, recording music soon.
Yeah, we're going to be listening to
Well, it's this thing where...
I mean, like, actors nowadays, it's like, it doesn't feel like men and women anymore.
Right.
It feels like everybody's vaguely androgynous.
You're right.
You know what I mean? Like, men aren't allowed to have chest hair, and women aren't allowed to have hips. And it's just, everybody's this vague sort of intersex kind of... Like, I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio, he's a fine actor, and he's, like, one of our leading men now, and he still looks like a boy to me.
He does, you know?
I had this
great aunt who used to rant about how, and still does, about like the movie stars of old and how, what a difference. You know, when she was a girl, she was in love with Clark Gable, you know? And she talks about, and she says, well, look at this kid, Brad Pitt. He looks like he's 12 years old, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, there was just something, I guess it's that weird phenomenon of when somebody is older than you, they always feel like they were older than you, even if you're, like, looking at a picture or a video clip or whatever, when they were actually younger than you are.
Yes.
Like, what I mean is, Lauren Bacall, I think she was 19.
Yeah, she was, like,
in,
yeah.
Whatever, the To Have and Have Not or whatever the hell it was. She was, like, 19 in that movie. Like, you know, and look at the 19-year-olds today.
Yeah, I mean, there was a different... I think the difference was back then the goal was to make yourself look mature and way older than your years. And I think now you have people who are middle aged who are trying to look like they're in their 20s. It's all happening in reverse, you know?
Yeah.
When you were a teenager, you wanted to look like you were not a teenager, you know?
Yeah.
But we have seriously digressed here, but you know what? I don't care. So exactly, in the dark, even though I'm not in the dark.
In the dark, exactly.
But Halloween, actually.
I just want to say for everybody out there that it was 97 degrees here today.
Okay.
I just have to say that. I know it's so lame to bitch about the weather, and this is not the place to do it, but I just feel like I have to point that out.
No, it's not, because it was about 7 out today in New York, so or in Connecticut where I am. So
97. My neighbor has her air conditioner running. Like, it's just absurd. I don't know what's happening.
Well, you know, you're in California. That's what you get out there.
I know, but it should be like, it should have been about 70 today.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's November. It's Halloween has come and gone. Election Day has come and gone. I should be wearing a sweatshirt right now.
Well, clearly, clearly it's the end of days. So, you know, that explains it. You could still wear a sweatshirt if you want. I mean, you'd be uncomfortable, but no one's stopping you.
That's true. No one can. No weather. What I can and can't do. I should need to take control back.
But so Halloween. Halloween was it doesn't surprise me that it got more votes than anything. I mean, because I did, you know, when I did something somewhat in the same vein of, you know, getting a bunch of people to send me lists of movies, and, you know, I did something to the effect of, you know, the 50 greatest horror movies of all time or something like that. And I had this really arcane ranking system and whatever. And I think you voted in on that too. And Halloween was far and away the winner of that one too. And I did not see that coming. I mean, I know it's a popular movie, but I mean, like, amazingly so. It's like everybody seems to agree more than anything else. That is the ultimate horror classic.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I did some posts for AMC this month for their Fear Fest, and they had voting on, you know, best director, best screenplay, actor, actress, all these things, best film on their website, and Halloween just obliterated everybody else who was even nominated. Like for best film, Halloween got something ridiculous, like 65% of the vote. And then second place was The Shining with 2% of the vote. You know, it was just absurd. Like people loved that movie. I had no idea.
I mean, I'm not knocking it. I love it, but it always surprises me that it does that well. Like, I mean, I can think of a lot of movies I would put above it. I guess it's just a matter of opinion, but it's amazing to me how overwhelmingly positive the results are always with that movie.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, I'm a little bit numb to it at this point in my life, but it's a really scary film. I think it's a really scary film, and I think it's one that's incredibly well made. The music is unbeatable, and it's accessible to even casual genre fans.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And so I think everybody loves Halloween. But I think people who maybe are really into horror, I don't know. I don't want to. I just mean, there's not too much meat on its bones.
Yeah.
Like under the surface of it being a really frightening slasher film, like that's kind of all it is, for the most part.
Well, the thing with me is, I think, you know, it spawned this whole subgenre, which, in my opinion, I don't think anything really ever even matched it. You know, it spawned a subgenre of inferior, you know, movies, which is, it's almost like, you know, Lord of the Rings spawns a subgenre of, you know, 1,000-page fantasy novels, none of which are anywhere near as good as Lord of the Rings. It's kind of the same thing. It spawned all these slasher movies, which are enjoyable, but none of them are Halloween.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a perfect storm of, you've got, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis and Donald Pleasance, who are really terrific. You've got decent enough writing so that the characters, even though they're sort of vapid teenagers, they're not too irritating.
Yes.
You've got the music and the directing and the cinematography, and a really fantastic killer, you know, as those things go.
Yeah, you can't, the Shape or Michael Myers, whatever you want to call him, is that's what really makes the whole thing go, is just, and that mask and everything. But Donald Pleasance, I always get a kick out of the fact that Donald Pleasance, okay, he's excellent, and he's the one, like, known star in the movie at the time, but yet, in terms of plot, he literally does nothing until the very end of the movie. He literally just runs around panicking until the
Yeah. And he's really kind of, Dr. Loomis is really kind of irritating and over the top. Like, he just comes up to people and is like, "You don't understand. He's going to butcher everybody in their beds." And you're like, "Whoa, dude. Like, let's just relax. Who are you, first of all? Second of all, stop clutching my arm." You know what I mean? Like, he's just like, Dr. Loomis would be, nobody would pay attention to him. He's too hysterical.
No, and it started to become really comical for me going into the later sequels, because he just kept doing the same thing everywhere he went. But this time his face is all scarred, and he's just constantly screaming that Michael Myers is here and he's going to kill everybody.
Yeah. He's evil! He's evil! It's really, I remember Daniel Harris said at one point that during Halloween 5, he scared the hell out of her because he was always yelling and he smelled like booze. And so if you go back and watch that film, it's really entertaining to think that she was actually terrified because she couldn't speak. She was like mute throughout the film.
Right.
And there's so many shots of her in the bed with him like hovering over her, yelling in her face. I think it's hilarious.
Well, he also he's the inspiration for Dr. Evil. I mean, he was I forget which movie it was, but he was the Bond villain that actually inspired Dr. Evil.
Awesome.
I mean, he had the cat and everything, the whole nine yards. I forget.
God, right.
I think it might have been Moonraker. I'm not sure which one it was, but he definitely was the one.
Yeah. I was, you know, going back to the list, I was more surprised to see The Thing at number 2 than I was to see Halloween at number 1. Like, I thought The Thing might place in the top 10, but I was not expecting number 2.
That's another one that everybody loves and is passionate about. And I mean, I personally, I definitely would have chosen it over Halloween myself. I mean, I love them both, but that's one of the ones where, yeah, I mean, it's, as far as horror movies go, it's just perfect from top to bottom. I mean, The Shining is another one too. The Shining, I mean, for my money, it might be, not really for my money, but, you know, it might be the best made, whatever that means, quote unquote, horror film ever. I mean, it's Oscar material, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would totally agree with that. I kind of go back and forth. If somebody held a gun to my head and was like, "What's your favorite horror movie?" I would think that was really weird, but I would probably answer. I would go back and forth between The Shining and Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah, it's funny because those are the, like, there's, in my mind, there's very different kinds of horror movies. There's the kind that you enjoy and they're really good at being horror movies and they're a lot of fun and they're fantastic, like The Evil Dead and things like that, and maybe even Texas Chainsaw Massacre. But then there's the type of horror film that you can put up against any movie that is, you know, up for Best Picture at the Academy Awards, and it would hold its own. And that's a whole other category, you know. Those are like the Silence of the Lambs and The Shining, and I would even like say, you know, Psycho, things like that, Bride of Frankenstein, even to go all the way back. I mean, they're just works of art.
Yeah. No, I agree, and I think that's kind of what I was alluding to with saying that Halloween didn't have much meat on its bones, is that with things like The Shining, movies like that, like, aside from all of the technical amazingness of them, there's themes to talk about. There are things, you know, there's a little bit of, it's just a little bit thicker than a sort of superficial, that scared me.
Yes,
you know, well, it's more about the human condition or whatever pretentious phrase you want to throw out there.
Well, no, I mean, it's about somebody who's got something to say, and not to say that John Carpenter had nothing to say, but, you know, it's really it's a movie that gives you something to think about, something to ponder, if I may use that word, unfortunately. But you know, and a movie like Halloween doesn't necessarily do that. But I think that's the problem, and this, now I'm going to trash horror movies and people are going to hate me, but that's one of the basic problems with horror movies in general when it comes to people who don't like horror movies, is the whole fact that they're not generally based around anything involving the mind. You know, it's all about getting an emotional reaction from you. So it always comes down to scaring you. And you know, it's different, like, compared to, say, something, you know, science fiction, which I think science fiction films tend to get a lot more respect. I don't think they make as much money generally, unless they're big blockbusters, but they get a lot more respect, and especially in the world of novels too, because they're known for provoking thought, whereas horror is always just known for provoking these gut reactions, you know. The science fiction novel, for example, and even more so than science fiction films, they get a lot of respect, and there's a certain amount of, especially nowadays, there's a certain amount of, like, venerability to that whole subgenre that horror never really got. And I think it's because they're known for sort of, it's considered somewhat more noble or whatever, that these to explore, you know, intellectual ideas and develop them and things like that, rather than just try to get this gut reaction out of people that's very, it's non-cerebral, you know?
Well, that's why I think that, you know, the movies that come after the masterpiece and try to imitate it so often miss the mark, because, you know, they'll take something like Psycho and the success of a film like that, and they'll say, "Oh, people love it when she gets stabbed in the shower." And so that's sort of, they don't kind of get that, no, we actually liked thinking about this and what it had to say, et cetera, not just the fantastic shower scene. You know, they just sort of pick up on the most superficial elements and run with that and think that's what people want to see. And to an extent, I mean, sometimes you do. Sometimes you just want to go watch a brainless horror movie that's fun and scary and whatever else. But, you know, the good stuff that really stays with you has a little more to say.
Yeah, and even when you look at Halloween, which when you actually watch it, and you see that there's not a whole lot of blood. There's not a lot of graphic violence. It's compared to what came after, it's fairly tame in that sense. I mean, it's more frightening than most of them, but you don't really see all that much. And it seems like the ones that came after, they felt like they had to just heap all of that on, you know?
Yeah, and not much, you know, if you want to call it stuff happening. Not much happens in that film until like the last maybe 15 or 20 minutes.
It's
back weighted for all the action, and the rest of the time he's just building and building and building towards that payoff, and it works really well. But nowadays, if we were to go an hour without seeing somebody get stabbed in the face, people are going to be like, this movie sucks. It's too slow. It's too this,
Well, compare it to the remake. I mean, that's all you need to do. It's like you can't sustain a shot for more than 8 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. Don't make me think about that. Don't make me think about that movie.
I'm sorry, I had to. It's better than making you think about the sequel.
That's true. Bless his heart. I know people love Rob Zombie movies. I just am not one of them. I know that I like plenty of movies that people hate, people don't like, and that's cool. I just, I've tried. I've given him a chance. I've watched all of his films.
I liked House of a Thousand Corpses a lot, and Devil's Rejects a little less, even though most people tend to like that one more, because I think a lot of horror fans don't have a sense of humor, so I think they look at House of a Thousand Corpses as being silly and ridiculous, and they see that as a bad thing, whereas I see it as a good thing.
Right.
But when he tries to do, but now he's caught up in doing these remakes, and it drives me nuts because, and now he's going to do The Blob, and I guess he's going to do it, and I don't even, and by the way, I'm working on copywriting the term blob zombie, because I invented it, and I don't want anyone to steal that from me, so making that clear, this movie is going to be called Blob Zombie.
Wow.
But, yeah, I agree. I mean, he's, that second movie, I saw it in a movie theater, okay? I went, if you remember, it opened on the same weekend as The Final Destination. They opened against each other, and I went to the movies, and I actually saw the both of them back to back. And never in my wildest dreams did I think I was going to walk out of there saying that The Final Destination was the one was actually my preferred film of the day. But it was.
Yeah. Oh, I believe it. I just think I like his aesthetic for the most part. I just don't think he's a very good writer. Like, I think if he was directing somebody else's writing, I think he would be okay.
There's no discipline. When you see that second one, you get the feeling that they just let him do, after the first one, they let him do whatever he wanted. There was nobody there to, like, rein him in. And that's the result of what you got. It was just complete insanity.
Yeah. Oh, from what I heard, the script changed on pretty much a daily basis.
I mean, you
had... actors would show up and have new lines. They would just, like, why even bother trying to learn anything when they're just going to hand you a new script when you show up on set?
I don't even know where to start. I mean, you had Cherry Moon Zombie and the white horse running around, and the ghost of his mother, which was obviously, somebody confused it with Friday the 13th along the way. He's running around with a beard and just wandering around, and then you've got Brad Dourif living in a house that looked like it was condemned about 12 years ago for no reason. And these two, I'm sorry, but I don't know. He was the one thing about the movie that I liked, because I could never not like him. I loved him, even in that movie. He was terrific.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I really liked Daniel Harris too. Like, that character didn't upset me that much.
I
just feel like he should let somebody else write it. I mean, like in the original Halloween, John Carpenter copped to the fact that he couldn't write dialogue for teenage girls, and so he had Deborah Hill write all of their dialogue.
Yes.
And so that's why it works, and they don't all sound like John Carpenter,
That would be interesting, though, a bunch of teenage girls who spoke like John Carpenter.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I never smoke. But can I tell you, though, the one thing, though, it's one of that movie's flaws, though, that prevents me from, like, putting it on a list with those other movies that I mentioned, is the fact that the acting that's going on in there is pretty much, aside from Jamie Lee Curtis, is pretty much at the level of a porno that would have been out at around that same time in the late 70s.
I can see that.
It sort of
is. I think watching it now, I think PJ's soul is a little affected, I will say.
It, It's in the realm of Debbie Does Dallas and things like that.
Yeah.
From what I've heard of the performances that are in those films secondhand.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah. It's true. And at least they were interesting. You know what I mean? Like, there was still something about them, and maybe that's just me being like, the old days were better. But they, I mean, maybe it's just the way they looked. Not that they weren't, you know, attractive young women, but they weren't all supermodels.
They looked real.
Yeah. They looked like real people, and so did all the guys in that film.
Oh, yeah, they definitely
Nowadays,
did.
Nowadays, everybody's just all gross and plastic. And...
Oh, well, the Nightmare on Elm Street remake, I mean, it was like it was like Abercrombie and Fitch made a horror movie.
Yeah. And look at that original film. I mean, they were all attractive people, but Nancy's hair was out of control, you know what I mean? She looked like a teenager.
And Johnny Depp wore a cutoff shirt, so...
With his rolled down sweatpants. Oh, it's so good.
But what was I going to say? At the end of the day, then what did you learn from Shocktober?
I think it really drove. Well, first of all, I learned that I don't know shit about horror movies. I mean, like I kind of do, but there are so many horror movies out there that I've never even heard of. You know, like there's just. I think I just realized the scope and breadth of the genre and how there's always going to be something new to watch and some new director to learn about and some new era to explore and all that. You know, there's just so much out there, which is a great, great thing. Like, I don't want to think that I've seen it all.
Yeah.
But I also learned that just about every horror movie is somebody's favorite horror movie. You know, they're varied and all of that, but stuff that I just kind of don't give a crap about is somebody's favorite film, and that's really cool, and it's just very strange how different things can appeal to different people so, you know, wildly divergently.
It's very true, actually. I've noticed that myself. I mean, I've had people give me some of their favorites, their all-time favorites, and it'll really blow me away. It's either something I've never heard of, or it's something that I never would have given a second thought. And yeah, that definitely happens. And you know, I mean, I've heard people tell me their favorite horror movie ever was The Brain That Wouldn't Die. You know, I mean, for example, which is amusing. But I mean, that I never would have. You know, I mean, it's interesting to me that somebody would. I'm not knocking it. It's just interesting that would be somebody's all-time favorite horror movie, as an example, you know?
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think it has to do with the circumstances in which you see a movie.
Yes.
Like, I know that there are plenty of films that I love that I'm looking at them through glasses to the past, you know, and it's just, it invokes a feeling in me of being in a certain place at a certain time or whatever, and it's almost more than just the film itself.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I mean,
look at it that way. But that's what bothers me when people, you know, comment and be like, well, this movie sucks. Like, I realize that we all just kind of take shorthand for stating our opinions.
Right.
But just because you don't like it doesn't necessarily mean that it sucks.
Well, that's one of the...
There are some movies that are probably just plain bad.
Well, I think one of the things that happens with this whole internet thing is that people... lose sight of the fact of, you know, what is opinion and what is not. I mean, anything can be your opinion and it can't be wrong by definition. You know, I mean, it's the person's opinion.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of lost somewhere amidst all of this kind of knee jerk commenting that goes on. People not really understanding what an opinion means, you know?
Yeah. I mean, The Descent came in at number 10, mm-hmm. the top 10, and that surprised a hell of a lot of people, but it placed that high. And plenty of people commented on the post and said, you know, I just don't get it, why that would be number 10. And, I think that's a reasonable response. I've seen plenty of movies that even some that are considered classics, like I can admire, like Psycho, for example. I admire the hell out of Psycho. I think it's a great, great film, but it doesn't speak to me on any emotional level at all. So it's more of a, like, admiring, you know, the Mona Lisa because I'm supposed to. rather than I think it's a really amazing painting. You know, so
right.
I understand that response, and I appreciate people saying, like, maybe I'll watch it again, maybe I won't, but it just, that movie doesn't work for me. Rather than, the Descent sucks, everybody who voted for it is an a-hole. You know,
it's sad when the conversation gets dragged to that level, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah. I don't get too much of that, but it happens every once in a while. And it's just, all it does is stop the conversation, you know?
Well, because there's nothing you can say to it, you know, it's either, okay, well, I like it, and that's the end, you know, there's not really much you can say to something like that. I mean, you know, my personal favorite is still George Romero's Dawn of the Dead, because of exactly what you're talking about. That's the horror movie of all horror movies that I would say had the strongest personal effect on me, you know, when I saw it. And so even though I think that effect, unfortunately, over the years gets kind of muted, I mean, you know what I mean? And especially as you get older and, you know, it doesn't, I mean, there was once a time where it actually genuinely filled me with dread to watch it, and that doesn't really happen anymore, unfortunately. But, you know, it will always remain as my favorite horror movie because of that reaction.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why I love slasher movies so much. I know that 99% of them are crap, you know, and most of them, I watch them now, and I'm like, really? I liked this back then, you know, but at that time where I was becoming a real horror fan, and, you know, we would go to the video store and pick out these movies, and just something like My Bloody Valentine was just the greatest thing in the entire universe, you know, and I still love it, but I know it's not necessarily a good movie, but I don't really care, because I really love it.
They're fun, you know. It comes down to.
So, but people who didn't grow up on, you know, with slasher movies or whatever, now they watch this stuff and they're like, why does anybody like this?
Right.
I have a friend who just saw Nightmare on Elm Street, the original, for the first time fairly recently, and she thought it was cute.
Cute. Cute. Okay.
That was her reaction. Yeah.
That would definitely not be high on the list of adjectives, I would imagine, but hey, you know. I don't know, maybe she was talking about, like, Johnny Depp's hair or something. I don't know.
I just don't know. That movie's not, I don't even know where it would place. If I had to give 100 of my favorite horror movies, it might place. It's never been a real favorite of mine. I don't know that it's aged all that well, really.
Well, it's the,
very much a product of its time.
There's no doubt that it, though, I mean, it was, I don't have numbers in front of me, but it has to have been the most, you know, successful / popular, famous, whatever, horror movie of the 1980s. I mean, I would say, yeah, it seems to be. But
yeah.
It's one of those, yeah, it's like everybody talks about it. And it, I mean, I think it's good, but it's not, I mean, I don't, I agree with you. I wouldn't put it on any kind of list like that. I could think of 100 horror movies I would put ahead of it. I mean, it's good, and I'll watch anything with John Saxon in it, as anyone knows. But it's nothing like, you know. I mean, it's good, but and it's actually one of my favorite slasher movies. But I mean, slashers were never one of my favorite subgenres. So, but I mean, I thought it was interesting that they took it in a supernatural direction, and it's kind of cool. But yeah, it's, you know, it's okay. It's better than the remake, though, that's for sure. But it's okay.
Right, I haven't seen the remake yet.
I actually liked it.
I don't know anybody who liked it.
Well, you know me, so you know one person.
Anything positive about it.
I thought it was good, and if the original had never been made, it wouldn't have caught such a bad rap. I mean, it was good. There were some good moments. I mean, there's a moment where, I mean, it was rock solid. There's this one part where one of them is in a drugstore, one of the teens, and they all of a sudden are dreaming. I don't know how the heck you'd be dreaming while you're walking around in a drugstore, but they were. And Freddy appears, and all of a sudden on the loudspeaker, the music in the drugstore, it becomes the Everly Brothers doing Dream, Dream, Dream. And it was just perfect, you know? I mean, like, it was something so good that, you know, it trumped anything even in the original movie. But that was one moment out of the whole movie, and nothing really equaled that for me. I thought it was okay, but it wasn't. It was certainly didn't deserve to be crucified the way that it was.
Yeah. Did you see the Friday the 13th remake?
Yes, that was garbage.
Yeah, that was. I kind of hated the world after I saw that movie.
That was, yeah, it was the most cynical kind of, oh, it really did bug me, what they did to that. I mean, because I liked the original one a lot. One of these people that liked it even more before Jason, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
I interviewed the screenwriter of the original, and he hates the fact that they continued it and made Jason the killer. He hates it. Because he said the whole point was that the boy was dead and was a figment of her imagination, driving her to kill people, you know? And to all of a sudden have him appear, and he's grown, and he's not dead, or is he dead? Like, not a fan. Not a fan.
Yeah. I can see that. I do love the second one so very much that I'm willing to overlook all of that.
Right.
Ridiculousness of him even existing. Because I like what they did with him in the second film. You know, I like that he was just a crazy guy living in the woods, basically.
Yeah, he wasn't. So. He was still human, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, he was like that guy that, you know, I mean, I grew up around the woods. There was woods across the street from our house, and there was always, you know, kids always told stories of people living in the woods. And the woods was a scary place, and to me, part two really captures that really well.
Yeah,
you know.
It does. And actually,
that was Big Sleep. The Big Sleep was the movie where Lauren Bacall was 19. Sorry.
Ah, okay. But yeah,
it just flew into my brain, so I had to get all Tourette's and just blurt it out.
And Bogart was like 3 times her age, or whatever the heck he was.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe twice. He was definitely twice her age.
Yeah.
Oh well, you know, what are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
But one last thing I wanted to hit on, because you mentioned Friday the 13th, was the fact that, yeah, I mean, the 80s really just kind of dominated, and I guess it's just all these crazy young kids, you know, kind of skewing everything, and, you know, I guess that's why that happens.
Yeah, I think so. I forget how young people are sometimes.
Well,
you know, like, I'll post something and it'll turn out they weren't even alive when the movie was made.
Well, it's...
No, and I'm not talking about something that was made in 1942. I mean, something that was made in, like, 1987. And they were like, yeah, I wasn't born yet. I'm like, how can you say words? Like, how are you old enough to function?
Yeah, you forget how much time has passed, you know. I made a realization earlier this year that... the graduating high school class of this year, the one that graduated in June, was born the year that I graduated high school. Okay?
Oh, my Lord.
That's frightening.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, which would be 1992. So, there you go.
Wow.
1992! That's horrible.
Just ridiculous. They should still be, like, in diapers.
I know. I still think. I think of 1992 like it was like 3 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's kind of strange though. Like, when I first started getting into horror movies, you know, like hardcore into horror movies, I was probably like 11 or 12.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I just wonder what the 11 and 12 year olds today, like, what are going to be their movies 20 years from now that they just love and adore, you know?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, is it gonna be fucking Saw 4? Like, I don't know.
It might be. I don't know. Everybody's always looking for something interesting to do in October. Who has a horror blog or a horror website? And it was definitely one of the cooler things that was done. So yeah. So thanks and thanks for coming on and talking about it.
Thank you. I have no idea what I'm gonna do next year. You know, like, I'm glad I have a year to think about it.
Yeah, I've not.
I just don't know.
I think I'll just do one of those things where I take a picture of my face every day for 31 days and just, you know.
Well, there you go. Maybe you should grow a beard or something over the course of the...
Yeah, maybe I'll do
that. Don't cut your hair and grow a beard.
Exactly. Or my fingernails or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Don't bathe. That'd be good, too.
Yeah, well, yeah, that could work. It's kind of, but that's kind of hard to demonstrate visually, you know? It's sort of, it's not impossible, but anyway. Yeah, so the site is finalgirl.blogspot.com, and so check it out, and I'm sure you already have, but and I want to thank Stacey Ponder for joining me in the Vault Cast for Conversations in the Dark this evening. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.